The Home Secretary has been criticised by refugee groups after he questioned whether migrants using small boats to try and cross the English Channel were genuine asylum seekers. More than 530 have attempted the dangerous crossing in the past year. Most of them have been since October. Joining me this morning are Patrick Corrigan from Amnesty UK and Charlie Elphick, the Conservative MP for Dover and Deal. Good morning to you both.
Morning.
I want to hear what you think at home this morning on this. 030 30 80 55 55. Do you think we should do more? Or in fact, would you welcome people like that to come and live in Northern Ireland? If you think about that, getting into a small boat during the night and trying to cross one of the busiest shipping routes in the world, what would make you take that risk? Yesterday, the Home Secretary suggested that migrants shouldn't take that risk but should lodge their asylum applications in France and not wait until they reach the UK.
A question has to be asked. If you are a genuine asylum seeker, then why have you not sought asylum in the first safe country that you arrived in? Because, you know, France is not a country where anyone would argue is not safe in any way whatsoever. And if you are genuine, then why not seek asylum in your first safe country?
He was criticised by Tanya Long, director of Samfire Charity, a migrant support group.
I think it's quite irresponsible of him to say that. These people have fled their countries of origin, fled conflict, perhaps oppressive regimes, have made long and challenging journeys to reach Europe, in this case northern France, and only people who are desperate will do that.
There are claims, Charlie, that this is an overreaction from the Home Secretary.
Well, I don't agree it's an overreaction at all. I think he's absolutely right to make the firm point that the international law is really clear. You should seek asylum in the first safe country that you come to, not the last one. Certainly, the system and the situation we have, it risks life by these people being encouraged to make very dangerous crossings across the Channel, which I am deeply concerned will end up in tragedy.
I think some people have issue with the stats, or maybe they're drawing a correlation to, for example, in 2016, the number of people that tried to make a crossing of some sort and were intercepted into the UK, and that was 56,000. And then if you relate that to that 530 last year that tried to cross the Channel, it seems like a very small percentage.
Well, whenever people say to me, crisis, what crisis? I just point to the history of how these problems develop, and that complacency always makes it worse. Everyone said at the time as the Calais jungle was rising, you know, oh, it's only very small. By the end, it was 10,000 people living in abject poverty, complete squalor, with people traffickers roaming free. And when it was finally dismantled, finally did the crisis end. And I have to say, Amnesty International were very critical of the jungle being dismantled. But I think it was the right thing to do to catch the criminals, put a stop to it, and protect vulnerable people.
Well, Patrick Corrigan, if Sajid Javid hadn't actually acted, he would have been criticised as well, so he can't really win either way.
No, he can win. He can win by putting in place a fair system for people to actually be able to make a safe and legal access to claim asylum in the UK, rather than, as they obviously feel the need to, be forced into these very dangerous journeys across the Channel. So we're in agreement on one thing, and that is that people should not feel like they're in this position where they've no choice when they're fleeing war or conflict or persecution or other reasons for claiming asylum, why they should be forced into such dangerous routes of passage, that they should be given other opportunities to claim asylum fairly, safely and legally, and not have to cross a 21-mile, a very busy sea journey in a pretty dodgy boat, which seems to be the case in many of these cases over the last few months. I do want to take issue with one thing that Charlie Elphick said right at the start of his interview, and that is that these people don't have the right to claim asylum in the UK. There is absolutely nothing in international law which requires refugees to claim asylum in any particular country, the first country or the second country or the third country they come to, but neither the 1951 United Nations Refugee Convention, to which the UK is a signatory, nor EU law requires a refugee to claim asylum in one country rather than another, or no rule requiring refugees to claim asylum in the first safe country in which they arrive. So people have an absolute legally enshrined international legal right to claim asylum in the UK. Their great difficulty is being able to safely reach the UK in the first place, and hence why so many are trying to make this dangerous journey across in boats across the Channel.
Charlie?
Well, I think that's just completely irresponsible, and it's a sort of rhetoric that encourages people to make these dangerous journeys across Europe and across the English Channel. And we can't have that. We've got to protect life, and we can't just put life at risk on the sort of principles that we believe, you know, that Britain ought to be taking more people from overseas. I think the right thing to do is to provide help and support to people close to conflict zones. That's what our country is doing. We're spending well over £1 billion of international aid money providing places of safety near to conflict zones, far more than any other country in Europe, with a view to, you know, providing places of safety and preventing people making these dangerous journeys. And I think all of us, you know, the government and the Conservative Party and indeed the Labour Party and indeed Amnesty International should all be working together to encourage people not to make these dangerous journeys and encourage people to go to these excellent places of safety that we have close to these very unstable regions.
It is right to provide places of safety close to regions of conflict. It is right that we should actually contribute to stability and safety in countries around the world, rather than, for instance, in Yemen, where we are actually supplying the Saudi Arabian regime with bombs and missiles to drop on civilian areas, therefore creating displacement of people and forcing people to become refugees. But people do become refugees, and we then have to decide, how are we going to respond to that situation? And the UK is frankly not bearing its fair share of that responsibility. If we look across Europe, last year we saw there were almost 200,000 applications for asylum made in Germany, 126,000 in Italy, 91,000 in France. In the same period, in total in the UK, there were just 21,000 decisions made on asylum, with just 31% gaining some form of protection. So the UK is not really bearing its fair share of responsibility for this asylum, this refugee crisis. And it's a crisis for the refugees. It's not a crisis for this country.
Is there confusion, Charlie, over the actual perception of asylum seekers and people, the numbers that are wanting to come to the UK? You heard some stats there from Patrick. In the year to last June, Germany, 168,000 applications. These are slightly different from Patrick's. France, 108, Italy, 102,000. And then you go down the scale to the UK at 35. It's quite different from the 160 at the top of the list from Germany.
Well, the question is, do you measure compassion by how many people we take into the West, by how many people we encourage to make, frankly, dangerous journeys, or do you measure compassion by the number of people that you help on the ground? And then,
but those are the applications. Those are people that are applying to.
I simply don't accept the whole premise of the argument that, you know, the answer is that, you know, Britain should take more refugees from their home countries and resettlement. I think the right thing to do is to have people in places of safety, close to conflict zones. When conflict ends, they can then return home and rebuild their countries. I think that is the humane, compassionate and right thing to do.
The numbers are dropping as well, Charlie. On 2002, the numbers were at 84,000. So that's quite a lot higher than that 35 from last year.
But the premise of that and the idea behind that is that somehow, you know, we need to resettle more people in the West. I challenge that absolutely. I think the right thing to do is to encourage people to remain close to their homelands and to provide places of safety for them. That's exactly
it doesn't need to be an either or.
It's not helpful and is you know, often resulting in tragedy, and we can't have that.
No, it doesn't need to be an either or. This is a complex problem requiring complex solutions, and that at the heart of it has to be respecting international law and taking a compassionate approach to the people facing the situation. You know, if we think back to World War One, when Germany invaded Belgium, the UK took in 250,000 people in the space of a few months, and they came across primarily to the UK in small boats across the Channel. They needed assistance at that time and at that place, and the UK opened its doors and opened its arms and provided asylum for those individuals until it was safe for them to return to their country of origin and the war had ended. We need to regain that sense of compassion, that sense of international responsibility.
Patrick,
and I fear somewhere along the way that has been lost.
Tell me this, Patrick, why do you believe so many people are travelling through different European countries to get to the UK? What makes it this El Dorado, I heard it described as, destination that many want to get to?
But that's a total myth. I mean, the figures you quoted and I cited earlier show that actually the UK is one of the countries in Europe with the lowest number.
And I understand that, I accept that, but people are still travelling through other countries to get to it.
A small number are travelling through, but many, many more are seeking asylum and securing asylum in places like Germany, France, Italy, and many countries right across Europe who are bearing their fair share of this responsibility. Very small number actually seek asylum in the UK, travel across those other countries to seek asylum in the UK. And I think when they do, we have to respond compassionately. Many of them are coming because of historical links, perhaps with the UK or perhaps with family links. But the numbers coming to the UK and the numbers being accepted into the UK are tiny. And I think just looking at a BBC report this morning on the Channel crossings, most of the people, and we're only talking about a few hundred people, but most of the people coming across the Channel in those boats are claiming asylum, and they're claiming asylum because they have left Iran. And I just reviewed Amnesty International's report on Iran for last year, and there's a litany of human rights violations, discrimination, flogging.
Yeah, and in contrast to that, is it
the rest? And so that's very clear why those people are leaving their country.
Yeah, but is it not accurate as well that around three quarters of those Iranians that apply for asylum in the UK actually have it granted?
Yes, they do. And that shows that they are not, as the Home Secretary sadly would seek to brand them, as somehow illegal migrants. They are actually people entitled under international law to claim asylum. And when they actually do reach the UK, make their asylum claim and it is assessed, almost all of their cases are being accepted as people fleeing persecution, fleeing conflict, fleeing human rights violations, and actually with a perfect right to claim asylum in the UK.
Do you think in any way if you could be accused of encouraging people to make that crossing if it seemed like an easier way to go if the Home Secretary hadn't taken the action that he has?
Listen, we need to put ourselves in the shoes of the people getting into those dinghies, getting into those boats to make that treacherous sea.
And I understand that, but that's not my question, Patrick. My question is, if it seems like a more plausible, direct way, it's such a dangerous way to try and cross the channel, if it seemed like it was easier to do or more likely of success and they weren't taking any action, would that possibly encourage others to try and do it as well?
This is not about the pull factors, about it being somehow an easy option. It is not an easy option to get in and make a 21-mile crossing.
Not at all.
It's the easiest crossing in the world.
No, and I'm not trying to say that either.
It's the push factors, Vinny. Sorry, I need to bring you back to the push factors and why these people are fleeing their persecution, their country of origin in the first place, and why they are making these treacherous journeys out of their own country across Europe. And a small number of them, a very small number of them, ultimately to the UK. And I think that we need to provide safe and legal passage for them so that they do not feel the need to make such a dangerous journey, that they are actually offered other ways, resettlement schemes and other safe routes in, so they and their children aren't forced into these boats.
Okay. There are some inaccuracies there I'd like to deal with. The first is this idea that the push from Iran is all to do with Amnesty International's report. A lot of what the authorities are indicating to me is it's more linked to President Trump continuing economic sanctions, and this particular group of people tend to be university educated, tend to be paying traffickers up to £30,000, which is a lot of money in any country, and are moving with their feet.
Three quarters of them are granted asylum by the Home Office because they have well-founded claims.
And then the other thing is, I hear what Patrick's saying, and Amnesty International is very clear, they want us to take in 250,000 more refugees, but I don't think that people in Dover would support that or could support that, and I don't think people in Dover think that's a proportionate response. The right thing to do is to discourage people from making these journeys in the first place, invest in places of safety through our international development budget, and they also invest in anti-migration pacts where we get other countries to help prevent people making these dangerous journeys. And I think the encouragement that's been given by a lot of this pro-asylum rhetoric and also the evil people traffickers has resulted in far too many people putting their lives at risk. So the compassionate thing, as I say again, is that we help people with places of safety close to the conflict zones, and that will result in the best hope for the future and preventing people making these terribly dangerous journeys, which so often end in tragedy.
You could say that in a different way and say to keep them out of the country, out of the UK and closer to their own?
Well, I don't think that that sort of rhetoric is, you know, is helpful, of not keeping them out and sending them back. It's not about...
But you're not suggesting to bring them in and to try and help them if they are fleeing a war zone.
Yeah, and we do that. We do help people, the most vulnerable people, we take direct into the UK from conflict zones. But what we seek to do is to keep people close to their homes, close to their own lands, close to their kith and kin, and you know, close to everyone that they know and all that they know in their own culture. And that's the right thing to do.
What do you think, Charlie, makes people so desperate that they do make that trip across the channel? Because it must be terrifying.
Well, absolutely, it's terrifying. But the question has to be asked, in my mind, and I think Home Secretary is rightly asking, is why are they not making asylum claims in France?
Why do you think that is?
Why are they not making asylum claims in other countries? I mean, France isn't that bad. It's a great country with it has a strong economy, just like Britain. And I think, you know, it's not right, as a matter of principle, that asylum should be a matter of country shopping. Asylum should be, if you're fleeing in fear of your life, you ought to be claiming asylum in the first safe country that you come to.
Okay. 030 30 80 55 55. I just want to bring in George at this point. First call of the day. George, I think you've got a point maybe for Charlie.
Yes, indeed. I would like to know what planet the Home Secretary is living on. Because these people are scared. They can't talk the lingo. And their families... A man's not going to put his wife and children in great danger crossing an ocean that he knows nothing about if he doesn't want to get asylum. I find his rhetoric very poor. These people are scared.
Well, there you go, Charlie. I think a lot of people would echo what George is saying there. These people are frightened and they must be to try and make that crossing in the first place.
Well, again, the question, as I repeat, is, you know, if they're scared, if they're fleeing in fear of their lives, why are they not claiming asylum in France? Why are they not claiming asylum in Greece? Why are they not claiming asylum in Austria or Italy? I think that's the key question.
And the answer...
This is due to the trafficking networks behind these things having... ending up in the UK and directing people to the UK. So it's as much a push factor by the people traffickers as anything else. And that's why we also need to have a strong focus on dealing with the criminal gangs who are behind so much of this problem. We need to find them, track them down, target them, bring them to justice.
Patrick, you want back in there?
And just to rebut what Charlie's saying, is that the vast majority of people, whether they're coming from Iran or Afghanistan or Syria or other places of conflict and human rights violations, are seeking asylum and being granted asylum in countries right across Europe in far higher numbers than those seeking asylum in the UK. The UK isn't fulfilling its share of that responsibility as things stand and should be actually seeking to provide shelter and home for more asylum seekers, more of those people fleeing conflict and persecution, rather than fewer. I don't think that we're facing a refugee crisis or a migrant crisis. I think we're facing a moral crisis in this country where we are willing to turn our backs on people fleeing desperate situations and putting their and their families' lives at risk.
It does come back to that travel issue, Patrick. That stat, 2016, 56,000 were stopped trying to cross into the UK. And you look then at the Dublin regulation, and that says usually the responsible member state will be the state through which the asylum seeker first entered the EU. So unless they are, for example, French asylum seekers trying to come here from France and make that crossing, why are there 56,000 trying to get into the UK? What makes it so appealing?
Listen, there is no legal requirement for a refugee to claim asylum in any particular country, and I have to keep coming back to that. So individuals, whether they're from Iran or elsewhere, have a perfect right to claim asylum in the UK or any other country. Most of them do claim asylum in those other countries. The numbers claiming and being granted asylum in Germany, Italy, France, and any other country I could name right across Europe is much higher than those who finally seek asylum in the UK. And Greece is sharing a much higher responsibility. Turkey is sharing a much higher responsibility than the UK. And just about every other significant country across Europe is sharing a larger share of that responsibility than the UK. The numbers coming to the UK and being granted asylum in the UK are tiny in comparison.
Well, I have to say, I think that's complete nonsense. Everyone knows that the Dublin regulation is very clear that people should seek asylum in the first country. It's a political objection and of Amnesty International, they don't believe in the first country doctrine. They just simply don't accept that. And Amnesty International believes strongly that we should have another 250,000 people in the UK. I cannot agree with that. I think it's really important.
You're plucking figures from the air, Charlie.
We need to focus. Well, Patrick, you mentioned that 250,000 figure. I think
that was from the First World War. I was citing that as an example of when we had a more humane approach to asylum.
And the humane approach is absolutely help people close to the conflict zones, prevent them from making these dangerous journeys, don't allow NGOs or traffickers to encourage people to make these dangerous journeys because it so often results in terrible consequences. And the right thing to do is make sure that we have the balanced migration system, not the sort of much more open borders, uncontrolled concept that is being promoted by some.
OK, let's go back to the phones.
You're conflating migration with the asylum system, two very different things, Charlie.
OK, Jim in Belfast. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, everyone.
Go ahead.
Happy New Year to all your visitors, or sorry, all your guests.
Happy New Year.
Same to you, Jim.
I've listened to the programme over many, many months about immigration, and nobody seems to ask what the people in England think of immigration. Now, the reason to come to England, let's be honest, England is the biggest soft touch going. We give out houses, money, everything free. So we do. Now, if you look back at all these countries that are at war, it's very, very funny when you look and see how many satellite bases there are there. How many people many people
You're
have...
You're totally generalising here, Jim. And is that fair?
No, just let me finish.
But what difference does that make?
But let me finish. They look at programmes on, say, for example, United Kingdom, and they see the way we live. And they say to themselves, I want some of that. Now, if they don't obey international law, which clearly states that you seek asylum in the first country after leaving your own country that is stable. So if they're not going to obey by international laws, are they going to obey by our laws when they reach here?
Patrick?
Well, again, I have to keep repeating myself, but no, international law does not say that at all. Neither the 1951 UN Refugee Convention nor EU law requires a refugee to claim asylum in the first country or any particular country. So that myth has to be scotched. The other thing is, we did a comparison of right across Europe of the benefit system and what was on offer, if you like, to people who were successful in claiming asylum. And absolutely untrue to say that the UK is a soft touch or provides a better offer. It doesn't at all. It actually provides quite a hostile environment for people here and trying to build new lives. So again, we need to address that. That is an untruth that's put about by people who are trying to find reasons to reject asylum seekers. And again, I will come back to the figures because the figures speak for themselves. Germany, Italy, France, Greece, just about any other significant country right across Europe is sharing a much greater portion of the responsibility, receiving and accepting many, many more asylum seekers than the UK is. The UK figures are tiny in comparison.
Patrick,
we should do better.
Tell me this, Patrick, what kind of reasons do people give for fleeing? We talk about war zones, etc., but when people are applying for asylum, what are they saying? What's the reason behind it?
Well, it will vary depending on their personal situation and their country of origin. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist or a political scientist to know if you're coming from Afghanistan, you're likely fleeing war and persecution. If you're coming from Iran, and apparently the majority of those coming across in boats in recent months across the channel are from Iran. There, it's a litany of human rights violations there. If you hold sort of liberal political beliefs or you're a member of a minority religion, you're likely to face discrimination and persecution. You'll face unfair trials and you could face torture and death sentence, including in the public square. So there are many reasons why people need to leave their country, need to get themselves and their families to a place of safety. In a small number of those cases, the UK is that place of safety. In most other cases, it's other countries right across Europe. And actually, if we're looking at this in a global context, most of the world's refugees are in some of the poorest countries in the world, the neighbouring countries to conflict zones and zones of human rights violations and persecutions, not the wealthier West or the wealthier European countries at all.
Desi in Banbridge, next call on this. Go ahead, Desi.
I just wonder, what does he think of Irish and British truck drivers when we're driving in Europe Is it acceptable that these immigrants or asylum seekers threaten us with iron bars, knives, sometimes even guns?
Are you addressing that to Patrick?
Yes, I'm directing it to Patrick, and break into our trailers. Is that acceptable, Patrick, for these things to happen? And then, it's acceptable to let them claim as asylum seekers?
Well, of course, that's absolutely never acceptable for people to use or to threaten violence, whether for this or for some other purpose. So, absolutely, I would condemn any such approach like that. And that where people break the law, they should be held accountable under the law, and whether they're a refugee or anyone else.
Well, I just have to challenge. Can I just pick up on that, Patrick? I mean, I remember when the Calais jungle was dismantled, Amnesty International was very critical of this Calais jungle being dismantled. It's an awful, squalid place with no sanitation and people traffickers roaming free. Amnesty International criticised the French government for getting rid of that appalling place. And I don't recall Amnesty International railing against traffickers revving chainsaws at the side of the road and throwing burning trees across the road to stop trucks so that people could break onto lorries and commit crime. I don't recall Amnesty International being tough on the people traffickers, and I think they should be. And what's more is, when people say, oh, Britain's at the bottom of the table, Germany's taken in 250,000 people, I don't think that that's the right solution for the United
Kingdom. OK, well, Patrick, you'll want to respond to that from Charlie.
I don't think that people would support, taking in 250,000 people. I think most people would say the right policy is what we're doing.
You've pointed some pretty serious points towards amnesty. So, Patrick, your response.
I mean, the Calais jungle was a dreadful place. What we wanted to see were proper temporary accommodation system put in place to support people while they were temporarily in that area of northern France, with proper temporary housing, proper access to healthcare and education and the rest. So the approach wasn't simply to send the bulldozers in, it was to put in place something decent and humane and compassionate for those desperate people. As for the truck drivers and anybody else facing violence at the hands of people traffickers or of those seeking to make a clandestine entry into the UK, absolutely, we condemned it then and we condemn it now. And
I don't recall you condemning it then. I don't recall Amnesty condemning it then at all. And what's worse is when the French removed these people to reception centres in southern France where they could be properly looked after and cared for and had sanitation facilities and running water, Amnesty International criticised the French government. I think Amnesty International need to look at their priorities, should be joining with everyone else to discourage people from making these dangerous journeys, encourage people to make claims in the first country they come to, and support the British government's work in providing places of safety close to conflict zones to discourage people and help people not feel they have to make the choice to make these dangerous journeys. That would be the right thing for Amnesty International to do, and I think to do otherwise is just not responsible.
Charlie, I fear that what's driving your policy approach to this is a sort of a closed borders approach, whether it's migration or the asylum system. And I think that that is not the right approach to people fleeing conflict and fleeing persecution.
Okay.
And I think we have to have a compassionate and human rights compliant approach to this problem. It's a complex problem, needs a complex set of solutions, and closing the door on desperate people is not the appropriate way to do it.
Okay, Patrick Corrigan and Charlie Elphick, thank you very much.